afternoon and welcome to Woods and Water, South Carolina. I'm going to have to turn that down a little bit. Blew myself out of my chair. It's a hot one out there, folks. If you're out there, I hope you're staying hydrated. It's Dave and I were talking. Oh, this is almost a month now where it's been that cookie cutter 92, 95, 98 temps and just, God. I wouldn't be too upset if I woke up tomorrow morning and it was like January the 7th or something. But anyway, welcome to Woods and Water, South Carolina. You're listening to it on 94.5 WGTK, The Answer, out of Greenville, South Carolina. If you can't get us on the FM dial, you can always go online to the station website, conservativetalk945.com, and hit the Listen Live link on the right-hand side of the page, and it'll tune you right in on your smartphone. There's also an app out there if you've got that. Busy show today. I hope we're going to be able to get everybody. I just talked to Anthony, and he's got a lot going on today, but hopefully he's going to make it. And speaking of busy, we're going to start it right off because there's an event. There's an organization, and there is an event in Anderson, South Carolina, that you need to know about, and I think you need to get back and support, whether going to it or donating on their website, and that's the Outdoor Dream Foundation. We've got Brad Jones on the phone. Brad, thanks for taking a little time to be on Woods and Water, South Carolina.
Yeah, we appreciate you letting us come on here.
Oh, not a problem at all. It's an organization I've known about for a couple of years. I think I talked to Hank Parker about it back in 2014, and I'm ashamed that this is the first time y'all have been on the show with me.
Yeah, Hank's a big supporter. He takes kids fishing and hunting, lets them be a part of his TV show as well.
Well, take just a minute, tell us who you are, and then spend a few minutes on the organization itself.
All right. I'm Brad Jones. I work at the commercial bank in Honey Pass, South Carolina. I do all the accounting and that kind of stuff down there. And I founded the Outdoor Dream Foundation back in 2012 after losing a special young hunting companion to leukemia, and the other wish-granting organizations dropped hunting from their program. We felt like it was something we really should do. So we formed the Outdoor Dream Foundation. It's 100% volunteer-driven. Nobody gets paid. And it's grown over the years. We've done about 400 kids from across the U.S. And we provide world-class hunting, fishing opportunities and also a mentoring program that we utilize close-to-home hunting and fishing trips as well.
On your website, it's you're a 501c3, so if people want to contribute, then go right there and donate on the website.
Do that, and they can take a look at what we do on the Facebook page as well. That shows each kid going on the trip. Just had a kid kill a big bison.
I saw that.
In Montana right now. Yeah.
Now, where was he from?
Now, he was from down in Little Park State near Somerville.
Okay.
He's treated at MUSC. We get kids from pediatric oncology centers in Greenville, Columbia, and down at MUSC in Charleston as well. And we also get kids from all across the country.
Dealing with kids in the age group you do and with the life battles they're going through and all that, how does it affect you or the guys that take these kids hunting and all to know that this could be the one big event in a young kid's life?
Yeah, sometimes we lose some of them. That's the hardest part. And we just have to regroup, keep going, and we serve one kid at a time.
It's got to be a rewarding thing, too, afterwards.
It is. I think the volunteers get as much out of it sometimes as the children. And got some really cool stuff going on. One of Hank Parker's friends, Doug Hamrick, he's with Outfitter Ratings. He's producing Outdoor Dream TV.
Ah.
And it kind of follows three children on their dream trips, and it's showing on Wild TV in Canada now.
Okay.
And in January, it'll start showing on the Pursuit Channel.
Wow.
So we're really excited about that. And his goal is to grow the foundation and even reach more children.
Man, that's a huge thing to get on TV.
Yeah, it is. It's really cool. It takes kids to Canada, Alaska, just all over.
Well, that's the Outdoor Dream Foundation in a nutshell. You can find out more about them at outdoordream.org. on the web, Facebook page. But you got an event coming up here in Anderson, South Carolina, the Civic Center, or the Sports and Recreation Complex, whatever you want to call it, August the 5th. Tell us a little bit about that, because you got a pretty special guest coming there, too.
Yeah, that's one of our major fundraisers. Last year it raised about $78,000 for the children, and got a kid named Josh Carney. He's from Louisiana. He's coming in to speak. He was injured in a turkey hunting accident and is paralyzed in a wheelchair, but through that accident, he did something to his vocal cords, and he can now call just about any animal around with his voice. So really special having him. And as soon as that event's over, Josh and a couple of the Outdoor Dream kids, we do a velvet hunt each year down in the Low Country with Hank Parker's son, Billy.
Okay.
We film that for their show, Flesh and Blood. So we'll take Josh and a couple of kids down in the Low Country, kill a few bucks. So that's going to be pretty cool.
Battle the mosquitoes. The yep, Low Country Air right. Force. Where can... okay, I know tickets are $25 a piece. You can get sponsors can get a table. How much is a table if somebody wanted to sponsor a whole table?
Table of eight is $800, and we're doing pretty well getting those sold. And got more left if anybody wants one. They can call my dad, Coach Harold Jones, if you've seen the movie Radio. You can get in touch with him at 864-226-8775, and he'll hook you up with tickets or okay. Table.
And the night, I guess, will be we're going to have food, and then we'll have a dress by Josh, and then auctions and all that.
Yeah, we'll have some great barbecue, and starts at 6:30. Josh will speak, and we'll have a couple of special presentations the kids will do themselves. We always like to get them up there, say a few words, and
yeah.
Have an auction and some drawings, and got to raise some money for the children.
I understand that. Well. You can find out about them on the web at outdoordream.org. You can check them on Facebook. Brad gave you the phone number. Man, I wish I could be there. I'm going to be in Huntsville at the FLW Cup, but maybe one of these years I can make it to one of them.
That's right. We hope to have it.
Well, I know I would enjoy it. Kids in the outdoors and ones that are at least getting some kind of little break from their, like I said, their life battles is got to be a special thing to see.
Yeah, we can get some out of the hospital and get your mind off doctor visits and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
There's no more reward than killing a big buck or a big bull elk or something.
Going to a place they've never been before.
Yeah. Some of them are just happy going out on the lake fishing at Hartwell. We just finished up a program called Fishing with the Tigers where we pair the kids up all summer every other Thursday with the Clemson basketball players and local striper guides, and we go out for an evening fishing and then come back in at the galley and have dinner. So that's a big deal to them, too.
That's pretty cool. Who were some of your striper guides that helped you out?
Casey Reeves, Cliff Bowman. He owns the Lake Hall Fishing Marine.
Right, yeah.
And we got just a big group. Brian Kelly. There's a bunch of them. There's about six or eight of them to help out.
Well, very good. Well, Brad, I appreciate you taking time out on your Saturday to be here with us. Hope y'all have a great, great banquet coming up. And if there's anything I can do, just let me know.
All right. We appreciate it.
All right. Take care, Brad.
Okay. Thanks.
Yep. And I hope if you don't have anything to do on August the 5th and you want to support a good cause, and on their website, it says, to date, more than 98% of funds donated to the Outdoor Dream Foundation have gone directly to support adventures for outdoor kids and their families. And, you know, I assume you put it up there, the 990 will back it up. But anyway, there's something for you to do. That's the calendar for this week, unless I can't get Anthony squared away on his deal. stay tuned. We're going to have a first-timer on the show. It'll be Brian Latimer, rookie on the FLW Tour. From Belton, South Carolina, is going to be here. So hang on through the break. We'll be back with more Woods and Water, South Carolina, on the other side. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. We're going to make the huge drive from Anderson, South Carolina to Belton, South Carolina and talk to Brian Latimer. How are you, Brian?
I'm doing well. How are you today, man?
I'm good. Welcome to the first time to Woods and Water, South Carolina.
I appreciate it. It's a pleasure to be here. I've been waiting on this a long time, so I'm excited about what we're about to talk about.
Wait, you make a host feel good, man.
Hey, that's what I'm here for, just to make everybody feel good.
Well, you are you're a South Carolinian, Belton, South Carolina, raised.
Born. That's right. Born and raised right
born
here.
Born and raised right here. You just finished up your rookie season on the FLW Tour, and we talked a little bit about that. But just take just a minute and tell us about yourself. I know exactly how you've gotten into fishing, but you tell everybody else instead of me telling them. And right. Then we'll talk about the tour a little bit and then some other things.
Right. I have a pretty traditional story just about like how most guys, of course, the story is kind of changing with the advent of high school fishing. But I picked up the fishing boat from my dad. My dad was a tournament fisherman. I kind of grew up around fishing and don't ever really remember not fishing. He was a tournament fisherman, and I think I fished my first event with him. It was like a little three-hour night tournament in second grade. I don't remember how old I was. It was in second grade.
And okay.
From there on, it just it just kind of took a fly from there. I just fished club tournaments when I was in middle school, high school with my dad. We had a team tournament, team-style format club tournament I fished in out of Greenville called 101. And, you know, I fished out of those, fished out of there for a while. And, you know, like most kids, once I got to high school, I was a tennis player and everything. So I kind of waned away from fishing for a couple of years. And there was a tennis tournament we went to in Evansville one time. And there was a lake right there in the community where we were staying. And I remember after one of my matches that I lost, I picked up a fishing rod. And it seemed like after that particular trip, just something happened, and I just really got the bug more so than I ever had before. And so I would say about the senior year in high school until now is when I really, really kind of got serious about pursuing bass fishing. So, ever since then, we didn't have college fishing back then.
Right.
So instead of going to 4-year, I had it so bad I knew I couldn't go to 4-year. I knew there was no way that I could concentrate and that I would be interested in going to 4 years of school and not being able to fish every day like I wanted to and being able to afford a boat because you wouldn't be able to work or anything like that. So I went to 2-year school at Spartan Murray Technical College, and I graduated there. And when I graduated, I started fishing the BFLs. And just kind of shot from there. In the second year, I think I fished the BFLs. I won one. And I went from there. Then I started fishing the Everstarts, which is now called the Coastal Series. And then this year was my first year fishing the FLW Tour. So it was a long process. That was about a 2-minute discussion on 20 years of my life.
Okay.
about 20 years of my life I just went through in 2 minutes. And of course, there was a lot of hurdles, obstacles. And,
sure.
There was times where you had to. Didn't think you were going to ever get to do it at all.
Yeah.
And so it's just all a blessing just to even say I did it. I don't know how long I'll be able to do it and how long I'll have to do it from now on, but it's been a blessing just to spend that 1 year. It's like a dream.
Tell us about that year. I mean, you said when we were talking at ICAST, you said your head kind of got in the way of the latter part of the year, but just talk about what it's like in the first year on the FLW Tour.
Oh, yeah, it's... honestly, you'll hear a lot of guys will talk about you're fishing at the tour level. Can you compete? Can you compete? Can you compete? And honestly, it really doesn't work like that. It does not matter. This is no insult to any other angler out there or anyone that's better than I am. It doesn't matter who you're competing against. Fishing just doesn't work like that. It's not like basketball. It's not like football or any of those other sports. It's really kind of about controlling the demons in your own head and learning what you're good at. And you got a lot of time to prove that in your clubs and BFLs, whatever you fish. This year, I've kind of started to grab a hold of what I'm good at, what I'm doing. And I was really pleased at how the year went. I had one event this year that I feel like I stubbed my toe on. I had two bad finishes. One was in Florida. I never take Florida finishes personal because anybody can still be tour in Florida. It's just one of those places where it can just get anybody. It's easy to zero there. It's just as easy to catch 30, 35 pounds. Well, you know, I had a triple-digit finish there.
Yeah.
Didn't take that personal. Had a good year, good tournament at Hartwell. Missed the cut by like half a pound or so.
Okay.
That was a little disappointing. But, you know, I'll still take it because it's hard to do well on your home weight.
Sure.
And I had a good finish at Beaver, and I got the Pickwick. That was one that was a little disappointing. I finished in the hundreds there. I think it was like 115. And that probably was the finish that kept me from making the cup this year. I was on that particular tournament there. It was a little frustrating just because probably really found what I needed to do to at least, you know, maybe not cut a check, but if I could have just finished in the 70s or 80s,
sure,
that would have got me to the cup. But, you know, instead I just kind of bobbed when I should have weaved and ended up in those triple digits. And that's what you have to avoid in order to make the cup. So, you know, just knocking those distractions out of my mind every tournament, not really worrying about what Andy Morgan is doing or David Dudley, some of those guys that you always hear about.
Sure.
Anthony Gagliardi, you know, yeah, those are guys that are just hallmarks on the FLW tour. And you just have to, that doesn't matter. I can't do anything about what they're fishing,
right,
how many fish they're going to catch, where they're at.
Right.
The only thing I can control is what I catch and what I'm doing and how well I fish. So I just really tried to focus on that. And, you know, I had some strong finishes. I had some real good finishes. I had a decent finish at Kentucky Lake. I was probably, wasn't my best finish, but it was the one I was most proud of.
Why is that?
About. It's a Tennessee River Lake, and traditionally I really, really struggled on those, on that Tennessee River during the post fall.
Okay.
You know, we don't have a lot of that terrain or any of that terrain.
Any of it, yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, I totally foreign style of fishing. It's not hard. But, you know, when you got $4,700 of the entry fee on the line, you tend to lean towards what you really know. And I don't know anything about fishing current, fishing ledges, anything like that. You know, we fish deep here in South Carolina, but it's just a totally different strategy fishing that Tennessee River. And I had a good day there. I had a really good day. I only weighed 10 pounds the first day, and second day I weighed close to 20.
Mm.
Actually, I had 20. I had one dead fish.
And, yeah.
So that was a huge mental hurdle that I climbed there, and it was just like a weight lifted off my back that I could actually catch them during the post spawn there, because I've always really, really struggled or cheated, what I say. You know, we'll go to Gunnersville like in May, and I would always cheat, fish shallow sight fish.
Sure.
I knew how to do.
Yeah.
Even though I would know that it would be one offshore.
Right.
So, you know, that was a huge obstacle. That was the tournament I was most proud of. And then we got to Champlain. I had been there before. I haven't had a real strong finish with smallmouth, but it's one of the things I enjoy most. It's so much fun. It's such a breath of fresh air to fish up north in those northern fisheries. So, you know, I had a blast there. Now, like I said, Kentucky was one of my tournaments I was most proud of.
Yeah.
Champlain was one of the ones where I had the most solid practice and actually had the most solid tournament. Folks out there watching probably don't realize how a lot of times you go out there and fish and it just doesn't work out that way in the tournament.
Yeah.
And was one where everything worked out. Yeah, but I still didn't cash the check. So it was hard to be upset about it. So, so it was all fun. I cannot wait. I don't know whose idea it was to have an off-season for fishing, but it seems like forever for February to get here. So I'm ready to get next year started for sure.
I hear you. Well, you know, I know there's not much consolation in this, but your buddy Neil Paul and I blanked on Toho a couple weeks ago. So, you know, we have that in common.
Yeah, Florida. That's Florida. Toho's in Florida. I tell you, it does not care who you are, what you do. It does not matter. It'll zero the best of them. It's a tough place.
I could not tell you using an unpegged Texas speed worm, and I could not tell you how many times I set the hook on hydrilla.
Yeah, it's hard to tell the difference there.
Yeah,
you're exactly right.
You know, that feels like a fish up here.
Yeah, exactly. We don't have grass. We don't have anything to throw on your line or anything.
Yeah.
Hydrilla kind of comes to the boat with you, so you're like, oh, God, that's got to be it. But
that's an 8-pounder.
Yeah, right, exactly. Florida fishing. But, you know, the funny thing is I enjoy Florida fishing, though. I never had a good event there, but I really enjoy it a lot.
Too hot, way too hot in July to be fishing in Florida.
Yeah, for sure. Florida is really hot.
You got some good, you got Greenfish Tackle, I guess, sponsor you a little bit. You got Fat Sack Outdoors, which is, and then Gimme That, I guess, is still on board with you?
Yep, Gimme That. Yep. Rattle Trap is my title deal there. Gimme That. Of course, the Visit Anderson or Green Pond.
Yeah, Green Pond.
That's a partnership I'm super proud of high seas fishing. I've got, for the first year, I was really proud with the support that I got from a business side of it, because that's what most anglers' biggest obstacle
sure.
trying to make it on tour is the business side of it. And I had quite a few before I even went a hook on tour. I was actually having a little pressure because I was thinking, well, God, bud, you really got to do something.
You got to produce now.
You got to kind of watch it. Yeah, you got all these people watching and trying to help you out. But it was a good thing. It wasn't. Yeah. I say that to say it was a good thing, and it really meant a lot to have some factory support out there my first year.
Well, good. Look, we got about 30 seconds before I got to start wrapping this up. Stutter Step, what is this thing you're talking about?
Stutter Step, that is a new bait from Rattle Trap. We just released it at ICAST this year. It's a walking topwater bait, but okay. It's a bait that is totally different than any other topwater out there on the market. You can do what we call the signature Stutter Step. You can make the thing just walk right there in place. You can get 15 or 20 twitches within 3 or 4 foot. You can just reel it, and the bait has action.
Okay.
You can do what's called a wag the tail. You can work it real fast. We've got clear water, spotted bass out here. We do a lot of offshore topwater fishing, so you can fish it really fast, cover a lot of water. Should hit the shelves in September, so everybody, you can follow me on social media. I'll be talking about it, but it'll be in stores in September. It's a bait you definitely want to have, for sure.
Very cool, Brian. Look, thanks for taking time to be on the show. Look forward to doing this again.
I appreciate it, Roger. I appreciate it a lot. Just anytime you need to give me a call.
We'll do it, bud. And you have a good off season.
I appreciate it. Thanks, buddy.
All right.
Have a great day.
All right. Belton, Brian Latimer. Love it when you got locals who'll be on the show. Hang on, we'll be back on the other side of the show. To do something about that. I went through and listed out all my bumper music the other day, so we're gonna weed out some of that that's kind of on the iffy side. Oh me, well it's always great when you can and talk to people like Brian and people, and my good friend Anthony Gagliardi is with us now. Anthony, how are you doing?
I'm good, man. How's it going?
I'm good. Look, I just pulled up the Level Fishing Rods webpage, and the picture on the front looks vaguely familiar.
Well, refresh my memory. I don't know if I've seen it since we changed it. Sometimes it gets changed without me noticing.
It's a picture I took of you at the TTBC, fishing down in Texas.
Cool. I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah,
seen it yet.
I just pulled it up to see, because you got some new products that are out there, and I just pulled it up, and I looked at that picture, and I was like, man, that picture looks familiar, and I see my watermark down here. So very cool, people.
That's right. Good.
I appreciate you finding a quiet place for me this afternoon. Sounded like you had a lot going on earlier.
Yeah, I was a little bit busy, but I found a nice little spot here. Got the kids all taken care of, and I got the truck all to myself, so shouldn't be any distracting background noise.
Very good. Did you run into all those thunderstorms coming through Jacksonville the other week?
Yeah, I did. It was pretty bad. Right around Jacksonville, it got really, really bad.
Yeah, it was rough coming home from ICAST. Speaking of ICAST, you're a busy man down there. What's the latest with Level? I know you got a couple of new spinning rods out there.
Yeah, we actually got three new. There's three new models. There's two spinning rods and a casting rod. The ones I had there were actually the first ones that I've had my hands on. They were the prototype blanks, and I've since given them the go ahead to start putting those blanks into production.
Okay.
So we're still a little bit of time out from when we get them up and ready and to have them start selling them on the website and everything. But I'm really happy with them. The first one, the casting rod, is a 7.3 heavy, and it's just going to be a really good rod for skipping a jig, hollow belly frog, all that kind of stuff. I had a 7.2 heavy that I was kind of using for that type of presentation, but it just needed a little softer tip. And,
okay.
And so I was able to play around with some blanks and had them custom make one. I had a tip like I like, and it turned out it's perfect. I mean, a lot of times you got an idea in your head what you want, and you tell them, and we have it takes a couple tries to get it right.
Sure.
But we got it right on that first try, so that one's good to go. The second two rods were both spinning rods, like I said. One's a 7-foot medium light, extra fast. It's going to be a really, really, really good drop shot rod, a light line rod, wacky worm, Ned rig, you know, just a real a finesse presentation rod. I mean, it's going to be even more so than the other spinning rods I got now. It's a lighter action blank. Just has a lot of tip to it. It's going to be really good for, you know, it's a real finesse type presentation. And then also a 7-foot 4-inch medium light extra fast based off that same blank with just a, you know, some extra length, and it's got a little extra strength built into the bottom half of the rod. And that one's that's going to be a really cool rod. People are going to really like that because it's just going to be different from what they fished with.
Okay.
But as a 7-foot 4-inch rod, it can do a lot of things. It's going to be a good smallmouth rod for fishing up north, you know, fishing a tube or drop shot, light line. You need a longer rod, in my opinion, with a smallmouth.
Okay.
Especially one that has some flex. So you get them up to the boat and you're using 5-6 pound test, and they surge so fast and so furiously that longer rod just gives you more shock absorption.
Gotcha.
You know, to handle those bursts of energy from the smallmouth. And it's going to be a good little, like a number 5 shad wrap rod, like a lot of guys throw around Harville and Lake Murray, just a small crankbait. It'll have a lot of uses even down here. It's not just a smallmouth rod, even though it's kind of, that's kind of what I had in mind when I was designing it, but there'll be a lot of crossover. It'll be a rod that guys down here will find a lot of uses for.
Brian Latimer was on the last segment talking about his rookie season. He was talking about how much fun that smallmouth fishery was up there on Champlain, and you're designing a rod for it. I had Debbie sitting at home going, "Don't say it." I said, "But I'm going to have to go up north and fish one of those smallmouth lakes. I'm just going to have to do it."
Yeah, you got to do that. I mean, it's such a blast. I've been fortunate. I've done really well over the course of my career on smallmouth lakes up north. I don't know the reason for that, but I've always had a knack for catching them, and I just love it. I mean, it's just, if we ever go to a lake and, you know, you can fish for largemouth or smallmouth, I always fish for the smallmouth just because I like doing it so much. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. Champlain fished extremely well this year. The fish were just coming up and spawning, so you're able to, you know, find spawning smallmouth, and I don't think there's a more aggressive animal on this planet than a smallmouth that's on a spawning bed. Put him right up there with the wolverines or all these things they talked about pound for pound.
So, sure.
Yeah, the most aggressive a smallmouth guarding the bed is right up there with the best of them.
Gotcha. Well, we were talking about rods and all at ICAST, and you told me something you did you shouldn't have done. Being a rod builder, and I know, you know, I've got mine at home and everybody's got rods and all. What would you say is the number one thing you shouldn't do with a rod? I mean, I'm guilty of, you know, hanging up somewhere and then using my rod to pull me over to where I can get it off. What would be some of the things you don't want to do with a rod?
There's some things like that. I mean, obviously I do them. Yeah, pulling the boat over, I mean, it's hard to pull my Ranger over with the rod, but the biggest thing that people do that you probably is going to mess their tip up is when you're hung up in a rock or something, and you can reach it with your rod tip, you wind down your bait, and you try to get it loose with your rod, and that's just, I mean, I say that that's not a good thing to do, even though I do it all the time, and it's just, and everybody's going to do that, but the good thing about ours, our tips are flanged. You know, the inserts on my tips are flanged. So
okay.
They're a lot more durable for doing that type of thing, so you're not going to break the inserts out on mine as much as you might on a tip that doesn't have that flanged insert. But obviously that's something, the less you do of that, you know, the less chance you have of messing your tip up. But other than that, I mean, you know, certain rods can handle, you know, they can handle more. My 7-6 flipping stick, you can do whatever you want. You could probably drive over it with your truck, and you're not going to damage it sufficient with it. You're just never going to have a problem. But you're going to have other rods. Your lighter action rods, obviously, are just not as strong. I mean, when that blank, you know, to develop a lightweight, sensitive, you know, light action rod, I mean, you're just, you sacrifice strength. That's sure. just the way. I mean, there's no, that's the laws of physics. I mean, to, so those rods, you just have to be a little more careful with. And the one thing I think that people probably do the most is, well, there's two things, a slack line hook set. A slack line hook set is really stressful on a rod. And like I said, the heavier actions can handle that. I mean, okay. you can get away with that on your bigger casting rods, but the spinning rods and your lighter action bait casting rods, they're just not designed to handle a slack line hook set. So just make sure, you know, one thing you can do is just make sure that you reel down, tighten that line up, and just try not to, just don't drop your rod. I mean, that's what people do. They may tighten down on a little bit, mm-hmm. but then they drop the rod down, which creates a lot of slack in their line, and then okay. they just set the hook, and it's just a whole lot of instantaneous shock, you know, placed onto that blank. And so, you know, if you can begin your hook set with that line already tight, that'll really cut down on any types of breakages or anything like that. The second thing people do is what we call high sticking. And that's just when, if during the, either on a hook set or during the course of fighting the fish to the boat, you see a lot of people that get their rod, you know, kind of way back over the top of their head.
Okay.
And pointed almost behind them. And it's just, that's probably the most detrimental thing on a blank is to, you know, if you can just imagine holding the rod, if you were standing on the shore or standing in your room and you take a rod and you're holding it vertical, and you grab that tip and you just pull it straight down to the floor. That's okay. what you're doing when you high stick a fish. And it's just not, that it's not designed to do that. So, you know, always try to be conscious of that. And you never really, there's really no need to ever have that blank any more than 90 degrees from the angle of pull. I mean, obviously when you set the hook sometimes, I mean, it's going to happen. I mean, it's right. not that you can't keep it from happening.
Yeah.
But just especially when you're fighting a fish, if it gets close to the boat, try not to point your rod to the sky to lift them up. I mean, make sure you have an angle on them where it's just not pulling. You don't ever want to try to pull the tip down to the rod, but that's how we test them.
Okay.
That's what we do when we develop these blanks. I mean, we have a breakage strength assigned to these blanks, and that's the way we test them. We put them in a vertical holder. Like, you'll have that blank, and it's just pointing vertically in the air, and we load the tip with weight. Until it breaks, and that's what you don't want to do. I mean, we're flexing it in the worst possible way,
uh-huh.
but that gives us an idea. You know, that gives us an idea of a certain breaking strength on any particular blank. So, you know, that's just not not normal. Most people aren't going to do that, but that's the way we test them in the testing phase of blanks when we're going in, when we're starting blanks in production. So, those two things there. I mean, we're really cutting down on breakage problems. But that's one thing with my line that I've noticed. I mean, our breakages are really, really low, way below what I would consider industry standard, which
okay.
is, you know, it's encouraging to me because I don't want to have to deal with warranties and breakages. And people that buy them, they want to have confidence in them. They
yeah.
don't want to have to worry about, you know, can I do this with it or can I do that? Do I have to baby it? And I didn't want to have a line of rods that you felt like you had to baby. I mean, I fish with them and I fish with my rods hard. And most guys do. And just, you know, normal fishing in the boat and putting them in and out of the rod box and just picking them up with a big bundle and care. I mean, rods need to be able to put up with a good amount of abuse. And ours were able to do that. So I'm really proud of that. But putting, like I said, that kind of reminds me, putting them in the rod box, that's one thing that you can kind of get into a problem. If you start slamming your rods in and out of a rod box or you pull them out real fast and maybe yeah. one's tangling, you get upset, you're in a hurry and you start pulling on it. That's how you break a lot of guides off. I mean, that's just one way you can damage your guides. So, rod sleeves, you know, like the rod gloves
yeah.
or something like that.
Yeah.
Really, really good for, you know, for keeping rods from getting tangled. It protects your guides when they're going in and out of a rod box. And, I do recommend people, you know, investing in a set of those. In the long run, they're so inexpensive for the amount
yeah.
of time it saves you.
Yeah.
Just time alone with your rod, you get tangled up. But not only that, but it's just going to protect the rod. It's going to keep it from getting, you know, it's going to keep the rods from getting damaged, maybe scratched or
yeah.
whatever. It protects your guides and all that stuff. If you know, hit it on the brick side of your brick rod or something, if you got that sleeve on there, it's not going to damage you.
Yeah.
But those are some things you can kind of just be conscious of, and it'll help.
Yeah, that was one of the things you told me when I was getting ready to fish Hartwell is, you know, go ahead and buy a bunch of those rod socks. They're cheap, especially as a co-angler. You got your rods beside you in the boat instead of in a rod box. But
right.
I keep them, when they're in the house, they're usually in a rod sock. It's just
it's foolproof. Not with it, might as well be in the right side.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Well, you we tried to get together at ICAST. Just, man, you were busy. They had you jumping and running and doing all sorts of stuff. But the FLW introduced their schedule. You introduced Lake Cumberland. Do you have any history up there?
Very little. I don't think many people had history. That's why they just kind of chose somebody to introduce that lake. I've been there twice.
Okay.
I fished two FLW events there. One was an Everstart, which is like the Coastal Series now. It was a championship, which was in the fall.
Uh-huh.
And the other one was a springtime tournament with the FLW Series, I believe, maybe in April. I think it was around April and May. The first one that we had fished, the Everstart Championship in the fall, was brutal tough. I mean, it was just brutally tough. I mean, if you caught a limit each day, you were doing really good.
Yeah.
And I had a shot to win that one, actually. I actually probably should have won and would have won. I feel pretty confident. So even though I didn't make the cut, I was close, but I found a marina on the lake, that mid lake that the fish were schooling in. And, I didn't get in there until the end of the second day, and I caught them pretty, ended up catching pretty good. I mean, I caught a limit out of them, and there were some good fish in there too. And there at the end of the second day, there were some marina owners or workers that were coming out. They were giving me a hard time, telling me to leave. I wasn't allowed to fish in there. And I knew that I was. I mean, there wasn't any rule against fishing in the marina. It wasn't posted for no fish or anything like that. I wasn't even fishing their docks. I mean, the fish were schooling out, just out away from all the marina docks.
Yeah.
But it was inside the wave break.
Right.
And it got pretty bad. But it was the end of the day, so I had to leave anyway. Well, the second day, I went to get back in there, and it was even worse. I didn't. The guys, they ended up calling. They called the police, and which I told them fine. I said, because this is what happened after the first day. There was a game warden at the weigh-in, and I approached him, and I told him the situation. He said, look, he said, you have every right to fish in there. He said, that marina's not private, and they can't tell you that you can't fish. He said, that, I mean, that's just, it's legal for you to fish. He said, you just go back. If that's where you want to go back in there and fish. So I did the second day, but it was just, they were just such jerks about it. They got in a little, their little boats, and were coming out there driving circles. They were driving circles around my boat, like just circling me, and it just got to the point where I just couldn't catch anything. I mean, the fish just—I wasn't going to be able to catch anything, so I had to leave. But I finished in the top 20, but I still should have made the cut off another place. I broke some fish off, but if I'd have been able to fish that spot all day the rest of that tournament, there's no doubt I think I would have won.
Oh wow!
But, that's just how it goes. Then the other time we fished was in the spring. The fish responded. And the fish was a little bit better then.
Yeah.
And I think since then, that's been a good while. Since then, the lake's gotten better, and the fish, they catch good fish in it. So it'll be a good tournament before us. There'll be some smallmouth caught. There'll be some spawners probably, some pre-spawn fish. You'll be able to catch them a lot of different ways.
Very good. What do you think overall about the tour this year? You got Lake Travis, Harris Chain, Cumberland, Beaver, Mississippi River.
It's different. I mean, that's the first thing that comes to mind. It's just, you know, we've been to Travis before, but only once, and it was a long time ago.
Yeah.
So basically, I treat Travis, Cumberland, and Harris. That's pretty much three new lakes for us.
Yeah.
I've never been to Harris Chain at all. So that will be completely new to me. But I'm looking forward to it. I kind of like some of the lakes I like going to. I like going to Beaver every year.
Okay.
But, you know, a lot of the stuff on the Tennessee River I get tired of. And I like to see when we go somewhere new like that where there's not a whole lot of people that have a lot of history. So it evens the playing field a little bit. And it's just, it's like when you've been doing it as long as I have, I mean, it's refreshing to get somewhere you hadn't been.
Sure. Wow. Well, it was good to catch up with you. Are you going to be at the Cup this year?
I don't think I am.
Okay.
I had thought about it. I don't think that I'm going to be the Cup this year. There's some other things I think I'm going to do in the fall. We got another exhibition that we're going to do. So I decided. I would have gone had I made the Cup.
Sure.
When I didn't qualify, I don't think I'm going to drive all the way out there just to set my booth up.
Sure.
Although it'll be a good show. Huntsville will be a good venue there. There's a lot of, that's a big fish community. I mean, anywhere in Alabama, obviously, a lot of people fish, but it'll be a good show. They'll have good attendance and all that, but I think I'm going to wait and I got some other things we're working on this fall that I think I'm going to put all the time and effort and money that we would have placed there into this other stuff. And it's going to be closer to home, too, so we'll see what happens.
Well, I'll be looking for you. I guess you got two more northern opens to fish?
Yeah, I got the James River. It'll be coming up in a couple of weeks. And then Lake Champlain after that one, I believe. Okay. So we got two more. Got one more smallmouth tournament for me to look forward to. James River, quite honestly, I'm not looking forward to that one a whole lot.
You didn't last year either.
No, I didn't. I did okay there last year, but it's just... It's a tough, man. It's going to be hot that time of year there. It's tough. It's tough fishing. But I like it when it's tough. So, I mean, I'll have a good time up there. But the James isn't one of my, that's not one of my top lakes, destinations, I guess I'd say.
Okay. All righty. Well, be good. Take care. We need to float to Broad for smallmouth one of these days.
I'm ready. I talked with a guy at the ICAST that lives down here that, I think they may be going next week. I may try to bum a ride with him.
Ooh.
Actually, going to the coast tomorrow. We're going to go catch some sheep's head.
Okay.
Down around Charleston tomorrow. Yeah. I'm taking that 7.4
All right.
Smallmouth ride. I'm taking it down there. we're going to do some testing. We'll get some video and some pictures. I'll be able to post them up on the website. We'll catch a bunch of fish tomorrow.
Yeah.
According to all the guys that are going with us.
Yeah. Well, if you got smallmouth next week, give me a call.
I'll do that. All I'll
right.
give you a shout.
Good enough. Take it easy. Thanks for making time for me, as always, and we'll catch up soon.
Anytime, man. I love doing it.
All right. Thanks, Anthony.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Let's get this break in and finish out the show for this week. Hang on. Boy, it has been a brutal day for bumper music. Yeah, we're gonna fix that this week. This week we're gonna get some new stuff in here. You know, I've debated about this little thing I'm gonna do here, but I'm gonna do it. It's not often that it's never gonna happen again, at least to me. But anyway, there are two women in my life that have got me to where I am right now. And one is my mom, who will be 80 on, I forgot her birthday. Tomorrow. That's right. Oh, geez. I can't believe I'm doing this. What's today? Tomorrow. My mom will be 80 tomorrow. That's right. This is the worst, the cruelest joke in my life is my wife and my mom have birthdays 3 days apart in July, which ought to mean it's real easy. I know they're coming, but I always get the dates mixed up. But my mom will be 80 years old tomorrow, and I'll probably catch it when I get home. But my wife will be 50 on Wednesday. And those two, you know, my mom grew up in Chester County. She tells me growing up she picked cotton. She has accomplished so much in her life besides getting me through the first 25 years of my life until she handed me off to Debbie. You know, she... Wow, she soloed my dad's J3 Cub. Dad taught her how to fly. Mom soloed his Cub off the, when they had an airplane. She took me deer hunting. I mean, I remember one of the first times I ever went deer hunting. I had a couple of 2x4s nailed up in an oak tree, and she took me deer hunting. And when I got at my little 2x4 deer stand, I looked back, and she was sitting on a tree limb behind me. And she had cancer, survived that. Just an amazing, amazing woman. And 80 is a huge milestone. I mean, you know, they've been married for over 50 years and raised us. She did a good job stitching me up. I think at one time I counted 32 scars on my head and face. I mean, I was all boy. Trust me. So moms out there who have one who is just all the time getting cut, and look, we survive. Just get good at patching us up. Some of mom's butterfly bandage scars look better than ones I had stitches. But she will never know how much of an influence she has had on my life over these last, 49 years for me. And I just want to say happy birthday, Mom. I know you're out there listening. I won't call you because you might be eating a chicken gizzard, for all I know. But happy birthday to her. And then, it's 24 years ago, the end of this month, that I asked Debbie to be my wife. I had gone out of town for a couple of days. I'd known her for three and a half years prior to that, and she knew exactly what she was getting She never complains about me because she knew me. She knew it. She knew I lived outside, and but she gave me a rudder. She really did. She's been a great mom to my girls. She has been a kindergarten teacher, an elementary school teacher, a middle school teacher, a high school teacher, and now she's a middle school teacher and a college advisor. She graduated Jordan all through homeschooling, and between ACT scores, her GPA and SAT, she's pretty much going to college for free. And just, so like I said, I have two amazing women in my life right now, besides my two daughters. And one's mom and one's Debbie. Happy birthday to both of you this week. Wouldn't be anywhere close to where I am right now without either one of you. So, and you guys out there who have wives and moms just like that, you know exactly what I'm talking about. You know, they kind of took the rough edges off of us and made us take responsibility for ourselves. And, you know, we're much better people for it. So happy birthday to both those. We'll do something special this week and to celebrate those. But bet they never in their wildest dreams figure they hear that over the radio. So excuse me for that. That's just something I had to get out there. And for the rest of you who want something to do, Skytop Orchard. They are going to open up August the 6th at 9 o'clock in the morning. So I guess apple season, and not only Skytop, but some of the others up there in North Carolina Mountains will open up. And you can go up there and get some, of course, they have picking schedules. If you go to any of these websites, they'll have picking schedule. But they sent me a little thing here. They're opening up at 9 o'clock on August the 6th. And I tell you, if you're going to go to Skytop, you need to get there early because, boy, they get crowded. And the line for the donuts just gets astronomically long. Get those donuts before you go pick your apples in the morning. Let's see, what else? Shoot, I don't know. I'm not going to try to get some of this other stuff and pack it in. We only got less than a minute to go. Next weekend, it'll be a recorded show, be a good one. I'm going to take the weekend off, and like I said, my wife's birthday, so we're going to do something next weekend with her. And then I'll be at the FLW Cup covering that. So it's going to be a busy couple of weeks. Hope everybody, you know, spring, fall is getting here. Time to make those plans to get out and deer hunt and whatever. But make the time to get outside, folks. Time's passing. Take the back roads when you can. Don't forget that camera. Hope you'll tune in next week for more Woods and Water South Carolina. See ya.